Aether Above, written by Kurgaya, read by Opal Song. Fandom, One Piece. Rating, teen. Category, gen. Also tagged for alternate universe, canon divergence, trans character, angst, hurt comfort, happy ending, implied or referenced child abuse, canonical character death, suicidal thoughts, and backstory. Recorded for Shadow Spires for ITPE 2025. She's 9 when her knees hit the street, when her hands graze the gravel and stick bloody to the stones. Her hair is a grubby, dark and rotten brown, chopped shaggy into shape over a gaunt, sickly face and shoulders. But it covers the quiver of her lip as she scrambles from the dirt, a thick, fur-like fringe hiding the scarlet handprint that burns across her cheek in shame. The door to the only normality she's ever known slams shut behind her. The voice, raised, wrathful, and tired. Get out! Get out! I'm so fucking tired of this shit! Still raging from inside. But if there's one thing she's learnt that could prepare her for this lawless backstreet world before her, it's to keep her mouth shut. Don't ask for anything. Do it yourself. She peels herself up from the path and picks the pebbles from her palms, wincing but never crying out as her fingers dot with blood. The scratches across her cheek and nose hurt more anyway, the skin throbbing red and hot and only more so as she scrubs at her eyes with a sleeve. Getting kicked out is not a new experience. She's 9, and she's known which back alleys around the house are best for sleeping in for years. But that invisible line, which she's never understood and yet still labored to avoid, has finally been crossed, it seems. The crash of the door, the creak of the house, and the quake of its walls toll like a church bell in her ears, a low and sinister good riddance, casting her to this graveyard of streets. And she doesn't kid herself by turning back. Instead, looking left to the wilderness and right to the town in which she's never lived, she hugs herself tightly and sniffs once, twice, and then no more, figuring that if this is how it's gonna be, then what does it matter which way she goes? Distantly, although she's not to know as a child of 9, the clack of wood against wood calls of a destiny. And beyond that, beyond further than she can even imagine at this moment, the coastal shores of forever guide her on. One day, a day deep in summer, the sun high and hot over a courtyard of concrete, shadowless stone of a military compound cracked in the blistering heat, a boy with a straw hat and the heart of a king will recolor this world in fearless blues and reds and dreams of gold, and will laugh at a man with a hair of bottle green and eyes of daring and coal. "You are the pirate hunter, Roronoa Zoro," he will ask, treasure of ribbon and straw bouncing at his shoulders. And the man before him will lift a head of pride and pain to stare at this boy who smiles and strides only in the silhouette of the sky. But for now, she is neither a pirate hunter nor Roronoa Zoro. And there's another man, one with a kindly face and wrinkles at his eyes, jet black hair on the edges of gray, tied back into a smooth sophistication. The wide, sweeping sleeves and darkly dyed cotton of his robe are a particular sight for the back alleys of this town, but he crouches down as though he has no care for the filth, the elevation that his wooden sandals provide insufficient in raising him above the muck. He holds out a very large, very tempting loaf of bread, an offer for her compliance. And she sneers at it, charcoal eyes warning of fire from beneath her tangling hair. "Do you think I'm stupid, old man?" she barks, curling further into her tiny body of 10. The stranger just smiles, crow's feet wrinkles, crinkling behind his circular spectacles, and she hisses like a cat in a corner as the food continues its inviting bob in front of her nose.
"Quite the opposite, in fact," the man says. "You see, I'm a teacher in Shimotsuki Village's dojo, just beyond the hills, and I'm on my way to the city in search of a new student."
"This ain't the city," she growls. "Back streets all look the same. They're winding narrow walls and sticky soiled paths enclosed in shadow at the end of the day. But even she can tell the difference between a dump of a town and a dump of a city."
"Yes," he says,
certainly wearing enough money to note that. He breaks off a chunk of the bread as though a smaller offering will entice her to cast away her common sense. But when she refuses to take it once again, he still only smiles.
"But I should think that I need go no further now. What's your name, child?"
This earns him a glower, and one supplemented with a hiss of, "I don't want anything from you." That only prompts the stranger to laugh.
"My name is Koshiro," he introduces,
and she turns up her nose, wishing that he would leave her alone. Minding her own business down here in the dirt hadn't been an invitation for some starry-eyed teacher to talk to her. A lot of people with good intentions have tried to engage her in conversation over the past year. After the first few times her naivety backfired, leaving her cold, hungry, and hurt, she cut her heart from her sleeve and cursed a wild fuck you at the idea of trust. "I don't care."
"Would you be interested in learning swordsmanship?"
Koshiro asks, shifting a little and his knees creaking at the jolt. He doesn't move any closer, but she flinches anyway, reaching for the wall at her back as though the outside world is willing to protect her. "No," she spits, the prospect of this man pulling a knife on her now a very real threat. Guns she can outrun, and outrun she has, but blades are weapons that even the dumbest people can wield. If Koshiro is a teacher of swordsmanship, then his skill could be next to none. This realization both terrifies and intrigues her. She can't deny. But she doesn't know if that's due to the thought of mastering the blade, or merely, maybe, perhaps rightfully so, dying upon one.
"Would you be interested in a roof over your head at any least?"
Koshiro asks, and it's all she can do not to snort. What sort of question is that? "Yes," she thinks, growling instead. "Get lost."
"I have a daughter about your age," Koshiro continues, talking as though he hasn't heard her. "I'm afraid that I cannot get lost any more than I could abandon her to this life. Truly, I believe you would thrive in the dojo."
Right, she's heard that before. And she tells him as much, snapping, "You don't know shit all about me."
"Yes, that's true," Koshiro agrees, But something in his eyes seems to argue, something that glints behind his glasses and sees more than should be possible.
I would only ask, in return for my becoming your teacher, that you be a most studious pupil. Nothing more, nothing less.
That's it, she breathes, brow furrowing in doubt. Shaking her fringe from her eyes, she squints a charcoal suspicion at his persistent smile, wondering what it is about this man and his lies that she wants to believe.
Maybe it's the bread. That's it, Koshiro assures her,
unfazed in the face of her ferocity, as though he's accustomed to the glares from street rat children. Maybe she's not the first of his students to be lured from the back alleys. Not, that is, that she's his student.
What about the bread? She asks. Yes, you can have that as well.
He presses the torn loaf into her tiny hands to make a point, and she experiences a moment of pure terror. If he's going to kill me, at least he's nice enough to feed me first. At the possibility of it being tampered with, or worse, before ripping off a corner and stuffing it into her mouth. It tastes good. Baked warm and squidgy and worth far more than gold in her hands. And half of it has been eaten before she remembers that this is playing straight into Koshiro's hands.
Yep, it's the bread. May I have your name?
The teacher asks. And that's the trap, isn't it? That's how this works. And yet, she finds herself offering a response anyway. She shrugs, mumbling around another mouthful of bread. This, at least, is a question she can answer, if only because she has no answer to give.
Don't have one.
She's never had one.
Ah, Koshiro replies.
Ah, if that's really the appropriate response...
Then may I bestow you with one? All great swordsmen must have a name to be remembered by.
Whatever, she doesn't say, too busy munching through the last of the loaf. Koshiro laughs at the sight of her cheeks bulging out, and there is something fatherly about him, she realizes, so maybe the existence of his daughter isn't a lie.
Is Zara to your preference?
She shrugs again. And so he decides.
Roronoa Zara.
And the surname, if nothing else, about this situation. His kindness, his sharing of food, and offer of shelter. Strikes her as peculiar.
Roronoa? Yes, I quite like it.
Koshiro replies cheerfully. Which isn't what she... Zara, she supposes? Had been going for. But she simply plops the final piece of food into her mouth at the response, deciding that she doesn't care for whatever cloud he pulled that name from. Her name from.
Would you like to come with me to learn the way of the sword, Zara?
He asks, extending a hand of scars and rough, thickly lined skin. And Zara takes a breath before taking his hand, wondering what it is that she really has to lose. The Ishin Dojo is located just on the outskirts of Shimotsuki Village, closer to the townspeople than it is to the coast, and surrounded by fields of a pastoral green on all sides. The sea is a phenomenon that Zara can only imagine, but she has little interest in the world beyond these rocky shores. Gravel and dirt are things that she understands, hit the ground and the ground hits back. But the ocean waves and tides and the currents that churn its emerald infinitude are forces that she doesn't dare to challenge. Her first impression of the dojo is wood and nails and tiles, things that can break, things she can escape from, but homey in its own way. The floor is polished and shoes tidy, and the whole place loved and cared for. Zara is none of these things, an unkempt, flea-ridden scarecrow of a child, But she does her best to arrange her shoes neatly by the door as Koshiro shows her around. When they reach Koshiro's home, her mangy presence has drawn a small crowd. Women from the town, perhaps mothers to some of the many young male students here, Zara can only assume, are conversing in low tones just outside. But their discussion ceases as Koshiro approaches, Zara scurrying along behind.
"My Koshiro-san,"
one of them greets, bird-like eyes darting between the teacher's easy smile and Zara's terrible scowl.
"I thought you were going to the city in search of a new apprentice."
"You thought correctly,"
Koshiro replies, one hand reaching behind Zara's head to do what she doesn't care to find out, flinching away from his touch. He either doesn't notice the way she grits her teeth or simply insists despite this, fingertips brushing her hair and pushing her forward into the gossiping gaggle. To Zara's surprise, the motion could be described as gentle, but she refuses to give him the benefit of the doubt, inching further into the hawk-eyed circle of women, if only to escape her uncertainty about Koshiro's touch.
"This is Zara. She will be training under me from now on. If you ladies would please excuse us for the evening, I would like to find my daughter."
"Oh, of course, of course," the women mutter, and Koshiro thanks them and leads Zara along the last few steps away from the gossip. A girl peeks around the front door of the house. The women continue to squabble and whisper between them, their eyes and pointing like vultures surveying their prey. But it's the girl, the daughter, perhaps, that Zara looks to, noting the mud on her skirt and her crow's nest hair.
"Kuina, this is Zara,"
Koshiro introduces, a wary smile replacing the girl's scowl as she diverts her attention from the women to her father. Koshiro ushers Zara closer, but this time he does so verbally, simultaneously blocking the two girls from the townspeople's view.
"She's going to be joining the dojo."
Behind them, the townswomen continue to fuss and mutter their disapproval at this, but Kuina's eyes seem to brighten as she catches Zara's gaze. And just for a moment, despite the whispers of, "but she's a girl," in the air, she seems so very defiantly alive. "There's never been another girl in the dojo before," Kuina explains that night, tipping Zara's head of grease and brambles back to wash her hair. "I'm 10, I can do it," Zara had argued, clutching her knobby knees in the tub as the other girl approached with soap and a towel. But Kuina had insisted, just as her father had, although her mouth had tipped down where his had lifted up.
"You're too small to be 10,
she'd said, splatting a handful of soap over Zara's head. "And what color's your hair even meant to be?"
"Brown,"
had been Zara's mutter, and Kuina had laughed as though this was the stupidest thing she'd ever heard. "It's closer to green."
"I'm sorry," Zara says, now, unsure how to take Kuina's observation. Apologies are usually the safest response, though, and she cringes as another cup of water pours over her head, the temperature warm and Kuina's hands careful, but the sensation unwelcome all the same.
"It's stupid," Kuina huffs, pausing to pick a twig from the other's crown.
Truthfully, Zara is bathing in her own filth at the moment, but the water is pleasant, and the promise of dinner,
"once you're clean, Zara,"
is enough to hold her tongue.
"Everybody seems to think that boys are better."
Zara says nothing. All she knows is that the boys on the streets had been raucous and violent, the shopkeepers and innkeepers only more so, and she'd been more scared of them than she had of not eating. But strangely envious, too, of the way they fought and spat and were never once called delicate.
"I think they're wrong," Kuina goes on, seeming not to care for Zara's silence.
She squirts another mound of soap into her hand, apparently deciding that one wash is not enough,
And then, as she returns to scrubbing Zara's hair, she begins to hum a nonsensical tune, as though her 12-year-old attention span has forgotten her frustrations already. Living with Koshiro and Kushina undermines all of Zara's expectations of what it means to live in a home. Koshiro is kind, truly kind. Even as the days creep into weeks, and still Zara lingers in this fanciful village, waking every day on a soft bed to hot meals and baths and good mornings and how are yous, still waiting for the other shoe to drop. But it's in Kuina that Zara finds a friend. Quick-witted and rough around the edges, prone to bruises and grazes and welcoming of the blisters on her hands, Kuina is loud where her father is not, but gentle where her father is too. Their hearts so open to the idea of this half-starved, ill-mannered freak staying forever that Zara doesn't know what to think. She honestly hadn't expected to survive the trip to Shimotsuki, let alone be given a bath, a meal, a place to sleep, and then wake come morning in the same bed with the same blankets and all of her limbs, and then be offered a bowl of breakfast. "Hey," Kuina says, ducking her preteen bedhead of spots under the table that Zara has dived beneath, expression contorting into confusion as she spies the younger girl curled up on the floor. "Would you like some tea?" "Tea?" Zara mutters. No one's ever offered her that before. Her parents would shout at her to make it all of the time. At least, until they started drinking out of bottles instead. Kuina crouches down but doesn't approach, regarding Zara's tiny form with an intuition beyond the 12 years she's spent loved and cared for. "Yeah, we've only got mint, though, because father keeps drinking all the jasmine. You like mint?"
"What's mint?" Zara would ask, were questions not usually acknowledged with fists. "I don't know," she admits, mumbling the safest option, and Kuina smiles.
"You want to come out from under there and find out?"
Zara isn't sure if her answer is yes or no, but she crawls out anyway at the beckon of Kuina's hand. None of the other students, Zara learns, live in Koshiro's home. Many live in the village, and many more lodge in the dojo, here only to train from home so far away. But it is only Zara who takes meals with the teacher and his daughter, who sleeps under their roof, and who slowly wonders if this is how it feels to have a home. Koshiro asks after her biological parents only once, but his smile slips a lot when she eats, when she hides, when she defaults to silence and fear. But Kuina never does. So Zara decides that she likes Kuina far more. She seems to be the only one, though. The boys at the dojo treat Kuina with disdain. During spars, they sneer but hold their tongues, aware that she's the daughter of a man they dare not disrespect. But beyond the safety of the dojo, they bully and taunt and cast her achievements aside. Kuina gives back just as fiercely as she gets, spitting and snapping and fighting to prove her worth. But she's one against many, one against a social belief that she cannot kick, bite, or punch into agreeing. When Zara picks up a wooden training sword for the first time, one becomes two. Kuina becomes sister, and Koshiro becomes sensei, for now. Koshiro has asked her to be studious, and so studious Zara becomes. Swordsmanship is a way of life, he tells her, the way she eats, sleeps, moves, and breathes. And considering her previous life had been scrounging around and waiting to die, Zara will take swordsmanship any day. If dedicating herself to a life of learning is the price for a roof over her head and a front door that she will never be kicked out of, then that is a small price to pay. As far as Zara is concerned, being a good student means 3 square meals a day and earning bruises only from training,
From trying, from slipping up and pushing on. Or at least she hopes so, anyway. Koshiro has yet to raise a hand to her in anger, but she isn't going to push her luck. She knows his skill now. She's seen him dance and strike and win. And she can understand why Kuina looks up to her father so. Zara would look up to Koshiro too, were she not looking to Kuina instead. Kuina has everything that Zara wants, she's coming to realize. A headstrong and driven personality, a goal clearly in her mind. She has fists that hit and feet that never run, a grin that only brightens with bruises and blood, a firecracker temper, and a gaze that rivals the boys in the dojo. Her chin lifted up, her jawline strong and masculine sharp. Zara is small and skinny, too skinny, prone to yes when she means no and silence when she means yes. She bruises easily, a tolerance she never achieved, and her hair clumps into knots, long and bedraggled where Kuina's is fine and short. She'll spit and snap, but only in defense. And for all that the dojo boys laugh and hate, and for all that they're wrong in snarling that girls can't be swordsmen, she can't help but watch them with something akin to awe. Kuina growls at them, tells them to get lost. Boys are stupid, she says. They're mean and ugly and stupid. And Zara feels something inside of her churn. Are they all like that? She asks. And Kuina blinks past the tip of her training blade to scowl an infuriated expression at Zara's quiet confusion. Yeah, probably, Kuina grumbles, huffing as she gestures for Zara to take her place. The wooden sword passes between blistered skin, two pairs of hands rough and sweaty from enduring hours in the sun, and Zara's hold slips around the hilt. She adjusts her footing, raises her head, and lunges into a swing. The sword whooshes through the sizzling backyard air, gravel crunching beneath her, and as Zara steadies herself, Kuina smiles wide and bright. It's okay. Who wants to be like a boy anyway? She says with a laugh, guiding Zara to correct her next lunge. You and I can stick together. We're sisters, and I like having you around. Really? Zara replies, wondering if this means that Koshiro, too, is sincere. Truthfully, he's never given her any reason to doubt him. Not once in these past few months, no matter the rules she breaks and the limits she tests. But then, when has anybody ever given her reason not to doubt them? Yeah, Father knows everything about swordsmanship, and you are pretty good, for a kid. Not as good as me, though, Kuina says with a laugh, sounding quite content to boast about her skill. Zara lifts the training blade and stares at it, asking softly, Could I be as good as you? Kuina squints, as though something in Zara's appearance will be enough to answer this. If you tried really hard, maybe, she decides, wobbling her chin in thought. I am gonna be the best, but you could be the second best. A voice calling up from deep inside of Zara isn't sure that she wants to be the second best at anything. But then, maybe, she rationalizes, thinking of pain and hungry and cold, endless nights in the alley. Being somebody's second choice is better than being their last. After all, she'd been her parents' last choice even before they cast her to the streets. They'd made that exceptionally clear. Because if you want to be the best, Kuina goes on, unheeded of the hardships that her kind of sister has endured. She smirks now, 12 and ready to challenge the world, and says, then we're going to have to fight for it. They could, Zara knows, just as she knows that Kuina would never lose. But you're going to be the best, she counters. She's known Kuina only for a matter of months now, but already Kuina has declared her dream something close to a billion times. Her conviction is indisputable, and even if Zara wanted to, she would never contradict her adopted family. If Kuina wants to be the best, then the best Kuina will be. And as her sister laughs and urges their training on, Zara decides that Kuina, the greatest swordsman in the world, has a particularly nice ring to it.
Sensei, she asks one day, the title like a name rolling familiar and firm from her tongue. Koshiro does not infer enough respect, but father is a word that Zara cannot bring herself to use, cannot bring herself to feel as though she deserves to use it, not with how Kuina utters it with such adoration. So sensei is a compromise that Koshiro allows. Zara, he had said the first time she'd stumbled, her panic forcing father through her lips, that still expected to be struck. He had smiled even as she clenched a jaw awaiting a bruise, her eyes tracking the harmless twiddle of his hands.
You may call me whatever you are comfortable with, child.
Yes, Zara, Koshiro says this time, setting aside his work to give her his full attention. Zara slips into the office at the beckon, one hand clutching the door and the other a pair of scissors, which she presents to the teacher. She hopes the gesture will be an adequate explanation by itself, but when Koshiro merely waits for her to continue, Zara has to struggle for the words she rarely uses. A question, a please.
Will you cut my hair?
Koshiro rises with a soft, of course, and motions for the scissors. Zara passes them obediently and then trots behind him as they detour to the bathroom.
How would you like it?
He asks, handing her a mirror to hold. Zara frowns at her scruffy, yet healthier reflection, having to scoop her fringe away from bright eyes and round cheeks to even do so.
Really short?
She ventures, and Koshiro hums, tapping the circular end of the scissors against his chin.
How short? To here?
He asks, tucking a strand behind her ears, and Zara squirms a little on the chair.
Shorter than Kuina's, she replies, trying to explain the picture she's imagining.
Trimming her hair is easy enough by herself. Grab and snip. But Zara knows she won't be able to cut a straight line above her neck.
Like a boy?
A boy, Koshiro repeats, prompting Zara to nod. She hopes her request isn't silly. Koshiro is always saying that she can ask for things, but it still feels strange. But it doesn't seem to be, as the teacher confirms.
Is that what you want?
Zara tries to smile, saying,
Yes, sensei.
And Koshiro chuckles as he reaches for a hairbrush. The women in the village don't approve of the new style, but then they don't approve of Zara in any shape or form, so their whispers of criticism come as no surprise. Zara does her best to ignore them, maintaining a steady gaze on the shopping list rather than their hawk-like stares. Even if their squabbling could rival the birds, their laughter shrill and cackling like that of the crows that nest atop the dojo. And Zara grits her teeth at the sound. She isn't sure what makes them hate her so. Kuina always hisses that it's because we're girls. But that can't be right, Zara ponders. Because the townspeople are girls too. And what difference does it make? She asks her sister. If we're girls or boys. And when Kuina shoots her a funny look and begins to rant about rights and roles and doesn't really answer the question Zara's intended, she holds her tongue. She likes Kuina, but she's not like Kuina.
This only becomes more apparent as the months roll over into a year, the hot summer sun sizzling into autumn and then slumbering through winter, the dojo never changing as the world revolves around it. Zara's 11th birthday passes with the silence of winter, a date as forgotten as the spring blossoms long since buried beneath the hail and the quieting snow. But Koshiro and Kuina still gift her with presents when they learn of this, and promise to mark the date on the calendar for the coming year. Truthfully, winter is Zara's least favorite time of the year. December on the streets was a month of hunger and fear, and January was only worse. Her recollection of those days broken into memories of white and ice and crying until she slept herself to death. Winter in Shimotsuki is filled with warmth, hot food and tea, a burning fireplace and blankets galore. But outside, the snow still falls and the sun refuses to rise, and Zara waits eagerly for spring to bloom again. When Zara reaches 11, Kuina hits 13, and 13 hits back hard. Even at home, away from the dojo, the boys that taunt and the sweat and the clack of the blades, like the beat of adulthood marching upon them. Kuina is adapting to the turn of time. She still laughs and plays and fights and trains, but there's a sadness about her, an anger about her, that brews as the days pass and stirs as the townspeople take note. The boys, they're teasing different now, and the women calling and questioning, "Why don't you grow up into a nice young lady?" Zara doesn't understand, but maybe Kuina does. They don't talk about it, but it's a conversation that's incessantly occurring between them. When they punch a group of boys for pulling at Kuina's skirt, when Kuina clutches her stomach and quietly asks for tea, and when Kuina trains more and more and more and more, only for their classmates to grow taller and stronger before them. Kuina ages into envy, and Zara ages into fear. Being like Kuina becomes the last thing on her mind, but the inevitability of reaching 13 is something that she can't escape. And growing up to be that nice young lady that everybody will expect her to be is a prospect that only terrifies Zara. Her panic is unreasonable. She knows that's what people would say. She can't explain the cause. The dojo boys, the townswomen, Kuina's anger. And she can't even put the feeling of, no, God, I can't, into words. It's just there. A constant whisper at the back of her mind, or a pair of spectacles over her eyes, as if the glass is tinted so that all she experiences is a skewed perception, a church mosaic of a shattered whole, of a scrambled, discolored mess of something that she's going to become. But what if that's not what she wants to become? Koshiro-sensei? She asks after dinner one evening, trying to frantically scrub the bowl before it slips out of her hands. It's her turn to do the washing up. Names were some of the first words that Koshiro taught her to read, and she passes Koshiro the bowl when he beckons for it. Kuina is somewhere. Koshiro had looked troubled when his daughter excused herself from the table, so maybe he knows. Zara doesn't press, unsure if she wants her sister to overhear this conversation anyway, and instead drops her voice to barely a whisper. "Is there something wrong with me?" The squeak of a cloth against the bowl ceases. Zara dares not look up at Koshiro's expression. She almost drops a spatula onto the floor. "Can you explain to me what has made you feel this way?" Koshiro asks gently, and when he adds the bowl to the drying rack, the clink of porcelain is a thunderclap in the silence of Zara's breath. She jumps almost a foot into the air at the sound. She's not scared of him. No, he's never struck her, and he never will. But she can't help but default to defense when she's unsure. and he steadies her with a careful hand before she tumbles from the stool.
Zara,
he prompts, firmer this time. It's almost, but not quite, his sensei voice. But Zara finds that the words come easier if she imagines that it is.
The boys at the dojo laugh at me because I look like a boy, and the women in the village say that I should act more like a girl, she explains, to the kitchen tap, hoping that she makes at least a little bit of sense,
when she adds, in a moment of realization, but I don't want to act more like a girl. I want to be a swordsman.
You can be a swordsman and a girl, Zara,
Koshiro reminds her sternly, but with a hint of a smile to suggest that it's not her that he's angry at.
Surely Kuina has made that clear to you.
Yes, sensei, Zara replies, trying to find the words to explain that she knows that. That she would never argue that girls can't succeed in swordsmanship, because they can. Because Kuina's going to be the best. But that isn't what she's talking about.
But only managing to stumble over a blurted,
but Kuina's, before snapping her mouth shut.
Yes,
Koshiro prompts, eyebrows rising high over his glasses. And Zara swallows and thinks,
Kuina's a girl.
Older, she decides, staring at a soap bubble and feeling a little sick.
Kuina's older.
She's growing up, Koshiro agrees, motioning for the spatula that Zara is still scrubbing.
Is that what you're worried about? Adolescence is a difficult time, but it's nothing to be afraid of, child. It happens to all young girls.
Whatever expression Zara is wearing, it must be terrible to draw such a note of worry from her teacher. And though this hadn't been her intention, although what her intention had been is lost to the toll of Kuina's a girl. She's a girl. Kuina's a girl. In Zara's ears. It's too late to mask it now. She hands the utensil over and then plunges her hand back into the sink to hide how it shakes, swishing the water around until she finds something else to attack with the sponge.
But Kuina's different.
She tries to clarify, catching herself at the last second. Different doesn't explain anything. Of course Kuina's different. She's always been different. So, so different. Despite how hard Zara tried to be like her. And when Koshiro's eyes soften, Zara knows that he doesn't understand. She doesn't understand either. And maybe that's part of the problem.
Kuina's going to be changing, yes, but so will you, Koshiro says, eyes smiling behind the thick frames of his glasses.
He doesn't understand, but he looks like he wants to. And Zara finds herself trying to smile, if only to reassure him.
Growing up won't change that you're sisters, Zara. You're still going to be you.
But I don't want to be me, Zara thinks. I don't want to be someone who's going to grow up into a lady.
Okay, is what she says, still smiling her grimmest smile as she pulls a saucer out of the sink.
The water is tepid and murky now, and Zara wonders if it could distort her reflection into whatever it is she wants to become.
Thank you, sensei.
There's a moment of hesitation before his reply.
You're welcome, Zara.
Zara steps up her training, because she doesn't know what else to do. One sword becomes two, and the new weight in her other hand shifts her equilibrium enough to distract from Kuina's incredulous stare. It seems to center her, the two blades, a perfect pair. And with them, both in her grasp as she tackles her training anew, Zara feels like she can do anything. The click-clack of two blades just a swish apart is a sound she could come to sing to. There's an elegance about dual wielding that she strives to refine, ardent about two blades as she never had been with one. The power, the ferocity, the almost impenetrable defense. equal weights offer a balance that Zara has never experienced before. Not cowering and small in her first house, not frightened and starved on the streets, and maybe not ever, not anymore, not with this strange sensation welling up within her. And she feels silly sometimes with how she reveres her two blades when really they are only one more of what she had before. She can't explain the feeling, so she doesn't. Just as she tries not to listen to the townswomen, the dojo boys, and the voice in the back of her head that asks, well, what's wrong with being a lady? Kuina becomes the only person in the dojo that Zara cannot beat. There's nothing wrong with being a lady, Zara thinks every time she's forced to submit to her sister's blade. Kuina's amazing and she's a lady, but I'm not Kuina and I'm not... Not what, she isn't sure. All she knows is that she's not. Not Kuina, not a swordsman, not liked by the village. Not. She trains, she learns, she tries to get Kuina to smile. She bleeds. It's okay, Kuina soothes that terrible day, holding her hand, showing her how to cope. How to control the pain, how to be clean. It's okay. This is natural. You don't have to be scared. Zara cries and cries and cries and isn't sure why. It's all right, Kuina promises, showing her how to control the mess, but not how to get it to stop. It's all just part of growing up. All the girls do it, so please don't cry. Come on, it's okay. And that's how Koshiro finds them just a few minutes later, both of them crying on the bathroom floor, surrounded by rags and laundry and the stains of a future that they cannot escape. And after looking quite thrown for a second, the father kneels down to lay a hand on his daughter's head. Kuina, he says, stroking her hair softly. How about we break open that expensive hot chocolate that we bought in Goa? Could you go and put the kettle on? Kuina nods, and when Koshiro reaches over to scrub the tears from Zara's eyes, she tries to nod as well. Koshiro ushers his daughter from the room, and then holds out his hands for Zara. How many mugs will it take for the tears to stop, hmm? Two and some cream? Three? Zara sniffs, clasping her teacher's hand as though he is all that holds her together. And Koshiro laughs. Boys have it easy, Kuina grumbles once they've collectively drunk half the tub of hot chocolate and the pain in Zara's stomach has faded to a dull throb that flares every time she moves. They don't bleed like girls do. And all Zara can think as she nurses the lukewarm mug in her hands is, but I bleed. The boys at the dojo get taller and nastier, but Zara doesn't, puberty changing her differently to her classmates. The other boys, perhaps, she sometimes cannot help but think. She's different to them, just as she's different to Kuina. But something about their height, their breaking voices, their stubble, flat chests, and rough and tumble play draws Zara just as she had been drawn to Kuina's short hair, broken bones, and unyielding attitude once, many months ago. Kuina gets stronger and faster to compensate. She's a warrior worthy of her goal, her fierce determination, and her father's proud smiles. And as Koshiro pushes her harder than ever before, Kuina unsheathes her family's beloved blade and rises up to the challenge.
The Wado Ichimonji would not let you draw her were you unworthy, Koshiro explains,
watching for the first time as Kuina clicks the magnificent katana out of its sheath.
Use her well.
I will, Kuina promises, holding the blade up to the light. The boys in the dojo look on with awe. with astonishment, with jealousy that they cannot hide. And Kuina accepts her inheritance with a bow before leaping forward and hugging her father. She hugs Zara, too, afterwards, after their classmates have challenged and lost to Kuina's spectacular skill. "We'll show them," Kuina breathes, wiping blood from the corner of her mouth as she looks to her sister. Only one hit from her opponent had landed, and Kuina smiles through the pain. Girls can be swordsmen, too. Zara nods dutifully, holding her tongue between a jaw clenched tight enough to crack. "I think I'm a boy," she wants to say. He wants to say, but doesn't, feeling sick as his stomach tightens like the churn of his monthly bleed. "Traitor," it seems to taunt, his body a riot against him. "Traitor, traitor, you're a traitor. She just wants you to understand. She just wants you to be a girl." He doesn't tell Kuina, doesn't dare argue and throw her conviction back in her face. Girls can be swordsmen, and Kuina is, and she will be, and Zara's not. He's not. God, he's not. How is he supposed to tell Kuina that this whole time her sister has been a lie? Zara doesn't tell Koshiro either, doesn't tell anybody. He goes on as he had, fighting and losing and bleeding and familiarizing himself with the sound of he on his tongue. "He," Zara mutters with the swing of a blade. "Him," he adds with the second. It feels right and it feels good, just as dual wielding had when he held the identical blades in his hands for the first time. He still doesn't feel like the other boys, but Zara likes the way it feels to have "I'm a boy" roll in a murmur from his mouth. "I'm a boy," he thinks. And as the seasons turn again and his 12th year approaches, with the winter winds, Zara thinks that he will always be a boy. Kuina fights her way into 14, besting everybody in the class. Training seems to be all that delights her anymore. So one night, as her hands cling to a training blade and she breathes fast and heavy into the evening air, knees grazed against the dirt and Zara yielding beneath her, defeated once again, Zara has an idea. "Hey," he says, scooping up the weapons he has lost. Even with two blades, he can't beat Kuina. But his sister doesn't smile at her victory as she slips effortlessly back into practice. Still, Zara doesn't let that bother him for now. He knows his sister, even if she doesn't know him. So if there's anything that could cheer her up, it would be, "Do you want to try live steel?" As expected, Kuina ceases her practice to blink at Zara's hopeful expression. She doesn't say anything for a moment, glancing between her sibling and the wooden blade in her hands. But as the cold autumnal breeze bites at their skin, dark clouds warning of rain overhead, Kuina smiles, really smiles. And so does Zara. "I'll have to go get Wado Ichimonji," Kuina says, holding out the training blade for Zara to take. They duel with live steel very, very rarely, and never this late at night, never without Koshiro watching from afar. But it never fails to cheer Kuina up. "I think she's upstairs. Wait here?" Zara nods, saying, "Sure," saying, "Hurry back." And then never saying anything to his sister again. The doctor says it was instantaneous, painless, and that she wouldn't have felt a thing. And there's no blood on the stairs, no mark on the stairs, and just a body on the stairs, just a sword on the stairs, just a father kneeling there, cradling a daughter that has never been fragile or broken or defeated, except in this moment, lying there at the cessation of a scream. Would she have felt fear? Would she have feared this as she had feared nothing else? Zara wonders, staring blankly as the doctor takes Kuina's tiny body away. Koshiro emits a very strange sort of sound, unlike anything Zara has ever heard from his mouth, but then doesn't react when Zara edges closer and clings to the back of his yukata. Koshiro's glasses are askew. Queena's neck was askew. They bury her in the sanctuary of the dojo grounds, and Zara cries the entire time. November arrives anyway, the world spinning on as though it has no idea what it has done. With it come the rain and snow, the winter darkness, and the hope for spring, and Zara's birthday passes forgotten once again. Truthfully, Koshiro forgets to do a lot of things now. Eat, sleep, laundry, smile. But Zara is capable of looking after himself. Looking after Koshiro is harder. Getting him to do anything is hard. But sometimes he makes them tea, and other times he teaches as though nothing has changed. And occasionally he calls Kuina when he beckons Zara into the room. Zara never corrects him. Fireworks color the grisly New Year sky, exploding bright and beautiful as though they can promise a jovial year. Zara spends the first day of the year curled up against Koshiro's side, wrapped up in blankets and slurping the last of the fancy hot chocolate. It doesn't taste the same as it had before, but Koshiro suggests that they smother it in cream until it's impossible to tell the difference. It's almost a waste of cream, but Zara is learning that life doesn't care about wasting things. Like dreams. "Do you know why I named you Roronoa?" Koshiro asks, offhandedly, were he anybody else. Zara starts at the question, at being addressed. Koshiro's mourning a silence that has engulfed their household, and shakes his head, recalling his confusion at the surname when they met 2 years ago, but realizing that he never questioned it after that fateful day. Koshiro's lips turn up, but he's not smiling. Laying a hand on Zara's crown, he begins to stroke his fingers through the choppy strands there, and Zara sighs a warm breath into the night. "It was my wife's maiden name," Koshiro explains. "Kuina's mother." And he speaks with such loss, with such heartbreak, with such a heavy, frightful sound that Zara cannot bear to ask after her, cannot bear the thought that he has taken away all Koshiro had left of his family. "I'm sorry," he whispers, tears welling up anew. Weeks have passed since Kuina, and yet the pain is still raw, a wound that they share and refuses to heal. Her name has not been spoken in the house, the dojo, or even the village, but Zara can feel it within every utterance and can hear it in Koshiro's every sigh. "I'm sorry, Sensei. I'm so sorry. It was my idea." He can hear it even now as Koshiro hugs him closer and soothes his hiccuping wails. "It's okay, child. It's not your fault, Zara. It's not your fault. It was only an accident." "Hush, child. It was only an accident." "I just wanted her to be happy," Zara sobs. "I just wanted to tell her, to tell her." Only he shakes his head before finishing that cry and buries his face in Koshiro's robes. Spring blossoms, and with it, Zara throws himself back into training. He needs to be stronger, faster, fiercer, and better where his sister cannot. And he needs to remain undefeated in the dojo if he's going to make Koshiro proud. Sadness lingers over the household still, their hearts weighed down like the earth beneath the winter white. But though the days are not good, they are better with time. Kuina's absence is like a presence lurking in the corners of their home, a shadow in the places where she would be, And Zara finds himself avoiding her bedroom, just like Koshiro avoids all conversation of her. The Wado Ichimonji is locked away, waiting for a time when somebody as worthy as Kuina will unsheathe her blade. And even the other boys at the dojo keep their taunting mouths shut.
My presence has been requested at a dojo on the other side of Goa, Koshiro sighs one evening over dinner.
And before he's even finished an explanation as to why he cannot bear the thought of making the journey, Zara is interrupting. You should go, he declares, because he knows Kuina would. Koshiro blinks astonishment over his glasses, but he doesn't appear to be offended at the rather abrupt declaration.
Zara,
you want to, so you should, Zara argues, snatching another piece of meat between his chopsticks. His teacher, his adoptive father, hasn't been himself since Kuina's death, and while Zara too sometimes just wants to curl under a duvet and hide from all the memories of his sister, that's not what Kuina would want. What Kuina really wanted is something Zara cannot provide. I'll show them, she denounced, searching for a promise from a boy she believed to be her sister. Girls can be swordsmen, too. Only Zara can't keep that promise.
I'll be gone about a week, Koshiro argues, the words wobbling as though they're enough to dissuade Zara from insisting. I don't wish to leave you on your own.
I lived on the streets for a year, Sensei, Zara says, matter-of-factly, and Koshiro's expression slips from uncertain to scandalized at the audacity, his jaw dropping right down to the floor. His expression is one of the same when he returns from the visit, beelining with an anxious stride through the house to find Zara watering the plants on the windowsill.
Goodness grief, Zara, what happened to your hair?
Is what he cries, and Zara jumps a foot into the air at his shrieking intonation, the cup of water splashing all over the wall. The flower pot creaks and threatens to fall, but then fortunately steadies itself as Zara whirls around at the abrupt arrival of his adoptive father.
Sensei, I wanted it to be a different color, he mumbles, clutching the half-empty glass as though it could do anything in the face of Koshiro's incredulous stare.
A different color is perhaps understating the particularly vivid shade of green that has swamped his previous brown. He had followed all of the instructions on the box, as he explains to Koshiro, but the green is an unexpected consequence of his efforts.
Goodness, Koshiro breathes,
setting down his luggage and adopting an expression that's probably meant to be reassuring.
I'm sure it will wash out.
I like it, Zara insists, speaking quietly just in case Koshiro doesn't. Green hadn't been his intention at all. He just wanted to look less like Zara and more like somebody else. And dyeing his hair had seemed like a quick way of becoming whoever it is he wants to be.
It's very green, child.
Should I get rid of it?
No,
Koshiro assures him, shaking his head firmly.
Goodness, he says again, eyes crinkling behind his glasses. Only if you want to.
Zara smiles, really smiles, glad for his acceptance and glad for this moment of happiness despite the last few months. And Koshiro, after a flabbergasted second in which he can only stare, smiles back. Two swords become three. Koshiro laughs and laughs and laughs, but as Zara mutters, oh, and considers returning the third, he lays a hand on his student's shoulder and says,
if you want to be the first swordsman in the world to wield three blades, Zara, then I fully support your decision.
To which Zara blurts, I'm a boy, and then shoves the sword into his mouth to stop himself from talking. Koshiro's hand doesn't move, doesn't clench or lift or hesitate or smack. And Zara is so relieved that even before Koshiro has knelt down and found the words to respond, he's already burst into tears.
Thank you, thank you, thank you,
he says in heaving sobs, words practically incoherent around the katana. And Koshiro just holds him for a moment, looking for all intents and purposes like he has no idea what to do. "Zara, child, son," he begins, taking the katana away so that Zara is free to wipe his tears. Zara hiccups, sucking in a gasping breath, and Koshiro asks frantically, "Come now, can you tell me what you're thinking? Can I still be a Roronoa?" Zara wheezes. "Can you? Of course you can. You're always going to be a... Oh, Zara." Koshiro presses his hand to his lips for a moment, and then settles his hand back down on Zara's shoulder, hugging him tightly. Zara hiccups again, or maybe Koshiro does, and then bows his green mop of hair into his father's chest. Oh dear," Koshiro mutters, sounding quite overwhelmed. And Zara is helpless not to laugh. Koshiro laughs too, crying with it. And maybe he's thinking about Kuina as Zara is, thinking about the girl they've lost and the boy they've gained, and thinking about the dreams that hang abandoned over them, a dream that Zara can never truly fulfill. Zara can be the greatest for his sister, but he cannot be a girl. Koshiro will bestow Wado Ichimonji upon him anyway, years from this moment, when Zara is ready, unbeatable and proud, and when Zara takes a breath and reaches for the hilt for the first time, the katana will slide free from its confines to shine a brilliant silver up to the golden morning sky. "Look after her," Koshiro will ask, meaning the blade, Kuina's inheritance, his inheritance, her dream. And Zara will nod, promising that he'll do the best he can to make his family proud. Koshiro's eyes will be bright behind his glasses. "We're already proud," he'll reply. And as he waves his son farewell, a good luck, a take care, and don't get lost, please, he'll manage to call at the very last moment, "The names of all great swordsmen are remembered forever." And his son will laugh, holding a white katana up high in the air. "I'll ensure that Roronoa Zoro is among them." The end. If you enjoyed this podfic and would like to leave a comment for both myself and for the author, you can feel free to do so. If you'd like to leave a comment for me, the podficker, the place to do that is on the podfic post, which is probably wherever you found the podfic to begin with. If you'd like to leave a comment for the author, the place to do that is on the text post, which will be linked from the podfic post. Thanks for listening. Reader's notes. So this fic was recorded for Shadowspires for ITPE 2025. And Shadowspires, I hope you enjoyed it. It was a little bit angstier than I was expecting. I know I've read this fic before, because as I was reading it, I definitely recognized bits and pieces of it. At least I'm pretty sure, actually. Cue me going back into it to make sure that I have left a kudos for it. But when I was looking for One Piece stuff for you, yeah, I've read it before. I had two sort of stumbling blocks. One, I think our main ships are sort of a little bit at odds, basically just because I don't ship Luffy with anybody. And then you did say that you, you know, would like Zoro Sanji stuff. And I realized that I went on a One Piece recording spree a little while ago, and I think I've recorded every Zoro Sanji fic that I have read and is sort of on my radar at this point. Yeah. Which is wild. I did not think that that was something that I could run out of. So then I remembered that Kirigaya had, like, has a bunch of these, like, Luffy and Zoro-centric fics. And I know that I've recorded one of their fics before, and I know that they, or at least I double-checked, they have blanket permission. And so I was like, okay, this is the sort of stuff that maybe I can just pull from their sort of bunch of, like, their catalog and find something that sort of fits both of us. And somehow I landed on this one because, again, I landed on this one because I do love me some gender stuff, and Zoro is my guy, and found family are my themes, is a theme of mine. And then I just recorded it, and I really hope it's not too angsty. I know you requested not a lot of angst, and now I feel like I've recorded two things that are, like, on the edge of that. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed this. I tried.